I agree with the prosecution in regards to Mr. Durant's involvement in the ending of Miss Lamont and Miss Williams' breath on this earth. And your death warrant is as follows, states William E. Hill, warden of San Quentin State Prison on January 7, 1898, to which Theodore Durant replies as he's perched upon the gallows trapdoor, I will waive that right and spare you an unpleasant duty. As the boards creaked and the door was readied for a pull, he uttered one last thing. I thank you for your kindness, Warden Hill, and he fell through the opening. He was, after all, the Demon of Belfry.
Hi, I'm Skylar.
And I'm Shelley.
And this is Diabolic Evil. Hello, and welcome back to Diabolic Evil. Our episode this week raises a lot of questions and brings into place the argument of evidence over hasty conviction.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that this week's subject of our podcast was merely convicted of multiple murders based on speculation alone.
And really only one bit of circumstantial evidence, as well as rumors and hearsay.
It definitely brings a lot of divide on whether you may or may not believe he is guilty. He was a strange man, but that's only if you believe the rumors and hearsay about his life before he was arrested.
I still don't know. And if you're still on the fence about his innocence or guilt, we give you a chance to voice your opinion.
That's right. Along with our episodes, you can give your thoughts too with our new listener questions for each episode.
We started adding these questions with our Louise Vermilia episode, and you can find them in the community section on Anchor and underneath the episode on Spotify.
We hope you engage with us on these episode questions and check out more on each episode at our website at diabolicevil.com.
So let's get into this week's subject of murder, religion, and speculations. A quick warning, this episode contains loose descriptions of suicide, traumatic events, and death details that may be sensitive to some. Listener discretion is advised.
Theodore Durant was born William Henry Theodore Durant, or otherwise known as W.H. Theodore Durant. He was born in the spring of 1871 in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He was born into a good, stable family of hard workers that encouraged a proper education.
His family soon immigrated from Canada to the southern United States for better opportunities, to which they settled in San Francisco, California, in the summer of 1879. Theodore Durant was a young child and was not the only child, but definitely not the most doted one.
His sister Beulah Maud Durant, also known by her stage name of Maud Allen, was an actress and dancer and is best known for her performance in The Dance of the Seven Veils. As well as many other appearances, she was definitely the one the family favored. She was also accused at one time of being a spy during World War I.
Maud describes her brother, Theodore, as showing a dark personality and a sometimes manic depressant. She also claimed that he was obsessed with sadistic expressions and writings.
With one account of a friend telling her that, to her shock, Theodore cut the head from a pigeon and proceeded to bathe in its blood.
His parents, William Durant and Isabella Hutcherson, would defend Theodore's actions on the fact that he was interested in anatomy and how the body moved blood through veins. But, with as much as they tried to defend, Theodore was always bringing cause for concern for others outside the family.
Regardless of judgment, Theodore applied to medical schools and was accepted to Cooper Medical College in San Francisco, which was the first medical college on the Pacific Coast. It was established by Elias Samuel Cooper in 1858, and it soon was incorporated into the Stanford School of Medicine.
With Theodore now a medical student, and gossip of his interest in body function, blood, and even corpses, he desperately tried to reverse his community image.
While in medical college, he learned and studied everything he could possibly learn about death and corpses left in cold environments. Professors and doctors remarked about how quickly he picked up the information and retained the knowledge, and he was doing well.
Along with his attempts to reverse his image, he also became a member of the San Francisco Emmanuel Baptist Church on Bartlett Street, right in the city center of San Francisco, and this church had quite the history with its sinful deeds, foredoomed pastors, and its congregation.
Unfortunately, San Francisco's Emmanuel Baptist Church went from bad to worse in a span of a decade and a half. The first pastor, Reverend Charles Hughes, told church members that either God or the devil would speak to him when he was alone in his chambers. The churchgoers thought nothing of this and told Reverend Hughes that God's words were a blessing. A few days later, Reverend Hughes had taken a straight razor he used for shaving and cut his own throat from ear to ear.
Several months later, in the winter of 1878, a replacement was found, and Reverend Charles Hughes' death was only spoken of as excessive stress due to starting a new church. The worshippers prayed for his soul and began to move on with their lives. The replacement of Reverend Hughes at Emmanuel Baptist Church again spoke of voices to a closed and trusted group of the congregation.
This alarmed a few of them, to which they removed straight razors, letter openers, and other sharp objects from his dressing chambers. Assuming the new replacement reverend was safe, the following morning, upon entering the church, the new reverend was lying in a massive pool of his own blood. Having taken his own life, church members were ultimately speechless. They were also confused and, thinking the church was cursed, decided to immediately relocate the entire church organization to a new location.
To which they did. After two untimely and unexplained deaths of self-killing, not a single person opposed the move, and the church was shifted to Bartlett Street in 1890, and what the simply thought would end their curse of death in their beloved place of worship.
Once moved, church business began as usual, and members began getting back into old routines. A few bits of scandal over the years followed, but otherwise the church conducted the same as before, with Reverend John George Gibson conducting service every Sunday and Wednesday evening.
With everything back to a new normal up until the spring of 1895, no one could have even prepared themselves for what was to come. Theodore Durant, whom became a member about a year earlier, had accepted a position of Sunday school teacher after asking to be promoted to the position a few months before.
At the time, he had proven to be a valuable addition to the church, and no one had issues with him wanting to teach the church members' children the Word of God and educate them on living a sin-free life through the Bible. His teachings were focused more on how children should behave and to grow up to become adults that live holy lives. Unfortunately, his teachings were just that, words. False words with a hidden agenda of his own. He had evil deeds and sins on his mind. Of course, the children couldn't see through this charade, but other members did over time.
The day before Easter Sunday, the ladies' church group responsible for church celebrations arrived at the church a short time after their respective dinners to find the body of Minnie Williams lying in the Athenaeum floor. She had been stripped of most of her clothing, with her own corset shoved in her mouth and halfway down her throat. But that's not what killed her.
What killed her was the multiple stab wounds to her chest and stomach, with the blade of the weapon still sticking out of one of her badly mutilated breasts. Upon discovering her body, a few of the women were so overcome by the sight that two of the women fainted and another regurgitated her previously consumed evening meal.
Police were summoned promptly, and an investigation into who killed Minnie Williams began immediately. A search of the premises was conducted, and investigators were soon met with another confusing yet shocking sight. Another member of the church was found to have met a similar fate as Minnie.
Blanche Lamont, whom was described as lovable, kind, and gentle, yet was known to be gullible and trusting as well. But although both women were found in separate locations in the church, the location of Blanche's body was quite peculiar. She not only was found to be strangled to death, but the position of her body raised even more questions.
Hey guys, did you know that you can be a sponsor of our podcast through listener support?
That's right. You can sponsor Diabolic Evil for as little as 99 cents a month.
Your sponsorship will go to help make Diabolic Evil even better and help sustain future episodes.
Your support can help take us to locations, help with research and fact-checking, as well as better equipment. You can visit the link on our website at diabolicevil.com or just head to anchor.fm/diabolicevil/support or hit up our social media pages at Twitter and Instagram.
If you're already a sponsor or subscriber, we thank you. And as always, thanks for listening. Her body was found to be completely nude and laying in the belfry, which is the tower steeple where the church's bell was housed. It was an unheated part of the church that had a closed-off area apart from the bell. Her body was lying on the floor, and her head propped up on a small piece of wood, and arms across her chest, similar to that of a mortician's pose.
Her body had been in this cold and dry side room in the belfry so long that she had resembled that of a stone structure. Unfortunately, as her body was removed from this state, it turned black in certain places once exposed to the air outside the belfry. A further search of the church revealed Blanche's belongings had been thrown into a crawl space leading up to the bell tower.
Her clothing, shoes, stockings, and books were recovered, but along with Blanche's belongings, a scarf and a book was also found to be Minnie's. Although Blanche's handbag was among the belongings, her rings she always wore were missing, as was Minnie's hand purse.
With the position of Blanche's body, members started speculating already that Theodore Durant had something to do with both women's death. Police went directly to Theodore's home to question him, to which he claimed he was innocent. They also began a search of his home.
A further search of his clothes revealed his overcoat's inside pocket contained Minnie Williams' hand purse, to which Theodore claimed was placed there by someone other than him.
The hand purse was found, but what wasn't found was any blood. No blood on the overcoat, no blood on any of his clothing, no blood on his shoes, and not a single drop of blood in his hair. But he was still arrested on April 14, 1895. Because as witnesses came forward, the police began to question Theodore Durant's involvement even more. Not to mention the hand purse found in his possession, but a few witnesses claimed to have seen Minnie with a man that resembled that of Theodore. But Theodore claimed that his stature and gait was identical to that of Pastor John George Gibson.
The investigators never looked at anyone else during this time, even though Theodore was adamant about his innocence and claimed that he was with Minnie, but left her shortly after. Others came forward and also stated that they had seen Theodore with Blanche shortly before she was discovered missing as well.
Blanche's mother even stated that she had expressed concern over Blanche's unknown whereabouts, to which Theodore told her to not be concerned, that Blanche was busy, or the story goes.
Upon hearing these witness accounts, Theodore Durant was arrested on Easter Sunday and formally charged with the deaths of Minnie Williams and Blanche Lamont. Local newspapers across the United States broke the news nationwide with it being their top headline. Due to the nature of the deaths, it made front page in all the papers.
Theodore Durant's trial began on July 22, 1895. During his trial, several young girls testified that Theodore would invite them to the church's reading room to discuss church affairs. He would offer them a hot beverage and would excuse himself. While the girls gave their testimony, they were visibly shaken and upset. The prosecutor asked them to continue, to which they stated Mr. Durant would return without beverage and would be standing naked in front of them. The young girls claimed they would be so startled by this, they would run from the room in shame.
The prosecution also argued that Theodore Durant being naked at random times inappropriately and blood not being found on any of his clothing could indicate that he murdered Minnie Williams naked. He also brought evidence that Blanche Lamont's hairs were found on the wooden steps leading to the belfry.
The defense argued that no blood was found on Theodore Durant at all, and if he had killed Minnie Williams, he would have some traces of blood on him, at least somewhere.
The defense was leaning heavily on the fact that Theodore Durant also resembled Reverend John George Gibson as well, and given the church's history, the defense was hoping this would help their case. But when the prosecution brought Blanche Lamott's sister to the stand, the jury listened to her testify. The three rings that Theodore Durant was identified as trying to pawn belonged to her sister, Blanche.
The jury heard from many others about the unstable character of Theodore Durant, and they deliberated for less than 30 minutes. They ended up finding him guilty of first-degree murder for Minnie Williams, as well as first-degree murder of Blanche Lamont. The only evidence they had was Minnie's hand purse found in his overcoat and a lot of speculation.
The judge sentenced Theodore Durant to death for his guilt and sentenced him to be hanged at San Quentin State Prison. Theodore Durant's attorney filed a motion of appeal several times in which all were denied. Even the request for a new trial was denied.
Theodore Durant still professed his innocence, even on the date of his execution. He was led to the gallows on January 7, 1898, and was given last rites, in which he told the priest that he needs all the blessings for his soul.
Theodore Durant was readied and walked to the gallows where Warden William E. Hale was waiting. He greeted Theodore and told him proper procedures for execution by hanging. Warden Hale reluctantly began with, "I agree with the prosecution in regards to W.H. Theodore Durant's involvement in the ending of Miss Minnie Williams and Miss Blanche Lamont's breath on this earth, and your death warrant is as follows."
The man, once admired by his medical professors, respected by those in his church circles, and defended by his parents, replied, "I will waive that right and spare you an unpleasant duty of that, Warden." Theodore was placed over the creaky gallows trap door, and the rope was readied for a quick jerk. Warden Hale looked at Theodore Durant one last time with a look of worrisome sorrow and disappointment and said, "Any last words for us, Theo?" Theodore Durant said, "I thank you for your kindness, Warden Hale." And the door opened. The noose jerked and ended his life with one quick motion. His body was quickly cremated the following week. The man dubbed a degenerate by some, the demon of the bell tower, was only a legend now. Besides only killing two women, he was also labeled a serial killer for the fact that during his interrogation, authorities suspect that Minnie Williams and Blanche Lamont were not his only victims, and it was later discovered that Blanche Lamont's body looked mostly the way it did because it lacked blood, as well as Minnie Williams' body. Although she was found with bloody clothing, with Theodore's speculated interest in bathing in blood, it was thought that the demon of Belfry could have regarded himself as a vampire as well.
This episode was researched and created by us, Skylar and Shelley, hosts of Diabolic Evil. Any information used in this episode is our own words and our own thoughts on the subject. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a like or a follow on Twitter or Instagram, and be sure to check out our website at diabolicevil.com.
As always, thanks for listening. Take care of yourself, and by all means, don't become a subject of our podcast. Yeah.